나자이다나브라마니다나야야데이다고다나시바사디고
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on September 29, 1986 at Toronto, Canada.The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 8, Text 13.
This is Maharaj Bhard without thinking. He probably thought that here I am in the forest, I am now already renounced, I am free from all danger. He didn't think, that his attachment to the deer was anything dangerous. Like this sometimes, there may be someone who lives in the ashram, and they may also think that because I'm living in the ashram, therefore I'm free from all the dangers. But actually, we can also become attached, whether in ashram or in house, to material things. Even in ashram,There's a story that Admatattva Prabhu was telling us yesterday, how Ramanujacharya, he was praising one of his Grihastha devotees, that they are very much Krishna conscious. There's a, if you want, he can tell you the longer story, I'll just tell the essence of it. That there was this... There was this deity in South India, and there, there was a deity in South India, and there had been a very attached person. He was actually the martial arts guru of the king, but he was only into physical education, muscle building, martial arts. He was very materially attached, but he had beenconverted or he had been delivered by our great Acharya, Ramanuja Acharya. So, but somebody, they couldn't imagine how that Grihastha was more renounced or more Krishna conscious than so many sadhus and sannyasis who were there living with Ramanuja Acharya. So Ramanuja Acharya, he sentone of the two brahmacharis, said, you go up into the brahmacharya, the sannyasi's quarter. There were so many sannyasis with him. He said, you go there and you tear up all of their kopins. The sannyasi, they only have two pieces of cloth. They have their external, three pieces. They have this outward cloth that's called bahirvash, or outward cloth. Then the kopin they're supposed to wear is one...There's two pieces of cloth that they wear, which is tied like a kind of a jockey strap around, I think everyone knows what a Brahmin underwear kopin is. Kopin is what we call Brahmin underwear in English. But that's the main dress when a sannyas takes sannyas, that's installed as an annunciation of Aruni, as a special like a deity that's installed, or kopin, it's an installed kopin, whatever. So anyway,That's supposed to be one of their prime dresses. And then the external dress is, like if they go to the Ganges bathing or something in India, if you go to Prayag, Allahabad, when there's a Kumbh Mela, you'll see so many sannyasis going and taking bath, only wearing their kopin. They won't wear the outside cloth. You see. And then the other cloth they wear is called, this is called Uttariya. This cloth is a design so in case they have to go begging, they just hold it like this. They can give donations. So that,supposed to be the renounced order. They just have this much cloth. They don't have so much else. Because of international, we also added shirt. But there are many sannyasis, they don't wear even shirt. In South India, to this day, you don't wear shirt generally when the sannyasi goes to preach. So the brahmachari disciples, Ramanujacharya, they went and ripped up all of the sannyasi's kopins in the night time.So when they woke up, they saw all our kopins have been ripped up. And so the class, he gave his morning class, but no sannyasis came to the class. Later, but the Grihastha couple was there during the class. So then he asked the sannyasis, why you didn't come to the class? They said, well, we had a huge argument over there. Who tore up the kopins? Who took the kopins? Who took our underwear? And so this was going on and we all missed the class. He said, your sannyasis, all you have in the whole world is one outside cloth, one kopin, one bib, and one utariya. For this year you have your kopin, why are you wasting so much energy over that? You've given up everything and you're attached to your kopin. You're arguing and fighting over that. So what is the problem? You're still materially attached. Even if it's over one little piece of cloth. So then next day, he told the two brahmacharis, that, listen, you go and you sneak into the house of this grihastha and you steal all of the wife's golden ornaments and you bring them here. So the brahmacharis figured out how to get in my house. So they went into the roof. The wife was laying there sleeping and she was just there sleeping. But she saw these two people are breaking into the house. And she said, oh, these are the brahmacharis of my Guru Maharaj. So what, why they're coming like thieves? Maybe the Guru Maharaj has ordered them to steal something. So if he's ordered to steal, then I should let them steal. So they came and then they... She was still wearing all the gold ornaments. So they said, well, how to do this? Somehow they very carefully, they took off the gold ornaments without waking her up on half of her body. Other half she's laying on. She said, the Guru sent them to steal. They only took half, so I'll just continue playing. I'm asleep and roll over the other side. They can take the other half. When she rolled over the other side, they got all scared. She's waking up. They all ran off. So they couldn't take her. She was lamenting that the Guru must have sent them. Of course, it's unlikely nowadays that Guru will send anyone to steal. If you see any brahmachari breaking in, then you can just call the temple first. But this was her idea. That the Guru is sent them to take the ornament. I rolled over and they only could take half. So now I committed a great offense. For some reason, he might want them to take all the ornaments. So then, the husband and wife, she told the husband they felt so bad, they wanted to commit suicide. So then, they went to Ramanuja and said that someone came and only took half the ornaments, other half they left, so we want to commit suicide, we haven't given, but you know, said if I tell, no, that was the thing, but if I tell that they came, they'll know I was not stealing. If I give it even, they didn't fulfill it. They came to steal, if I give it, then it's not the same thing. So they're feeling very bad. So then Ramanujacharya had someone verify what was happening. And he heard that they're feeling very bad. They want to even commit suicide because they think that they didn't fulfill the order of their guru. Somehow the guru's desire was not fulfilled. So he brought them and then he showed everyone, look at, these are different. The sannyasis are fighting because their underwear got misplaced. And these people are missing hundreds of thousands of rupees worth of gold ornaments and they are lamenting that only half was taken if it was the desire of the guru. So who's attached and who's detached? So here Prabhupada said that if we remember everything is for Krishna, then there's no chance of our being victimized by material activities. But if somebody, they think I'm very renounced, but they even get attached to their underwear or they get attached to their deer, someone gives up the whole world and then someone takes their sock and they get all angry and get ready to beat someone. This is the illusion of Maya. If we give everything up, what do we care if somebody takes our cloth? If someone this or that happens, we should be actually detached. Otherwise there's no use in imitating the so-called renounced orders. Better to be this grihastha that sees everything for Krishna. They offer their food to Krishna. They use whatever they have to make a Krishna conscious environment in their house and they use what they can for Krishna's service. If they see everything for Krishna, then there's no illusion. This is our basic purport. Of course, our Vedic social structure is such, we always respect those who overtly have more renunciation. But we have to always refine our renunciation, not just be satisfied with some superficial. Even a person may be a sannyasi, but he may be demanding for himself, or he may think that I deserve to get great respect, I deserve to become honored by people before my renunciation. If they don't respect me, then they feel offended. But actually, sannyasi should be equal. If he is offered respect or not offered respect, if a brahmachari is respected or not respected for being brahmachari, it won't affect his determination in devotional service. He's one, whether it's fame or infamy, whether it's in honor or dishonor. His duty is the same. How many times persons engaging in devotional service, they become upset over insignificant things. What this one said, this one didn't give me prasad first, or this one didn't do this, or that I was neglected at this time, or whatever. Different insignificant things happen, and these are allowed to take predominance in our mind. Actually, we just take everything as the mercy of Krishna, and within whatever situation we are, we try to do the most Krishna conscious. So in a sense, Prabhupada is saying that he left everything, but if he became attached to an insignificant pet, what was the use of renouncing his family? For our instruction, of course, Bharat Maharaj, he got a bigger instruction. There's the next birth, and he had to take birth as a deer due to his overt attachment, to his excessive attachment. The life is very complicated. And the person, he can cultivate Krishna consciousness in any situation. Whether grihe tako, bone tako, sadahadi bole dako, whether he's in the grihasthashram, or whether in the more renounced orders, the banaprast or brahmachari or sannyas ashram. The point is that one should actually cultivate doing everything for Krishna. That is the actual test. Someone may be the most renounced, but in their mind, if they're still having attachment to being respected or to getting followers or to other things for a material purpose, just like labh, puja, pratishtadi, if they want to be important or if they want some kind of profit from what they're doing, then they're also contaminated. Or if somebody, they feel detached, even in their family situation, they feel detached, that there's so many difficulties in the sangsar life, but I'm trying to do everything so ultimately Krishna will be pleased. So the children can be God conscious, so that I can ultimately go back to Krishna. So that person is Krishna conscious, even though externally it appears that the person is very attached. He's doing everything for Krishna. So this doing things for Krishna, this consciousness, however, has to be cultivated. Normally, someone in the grihastha ashram doesn't do everything for Krishna. They do everything simply out of material attachment. They think, aham nirmami, this is I and mine. I am this body, and this body is connected with these things, and therefore I have to work hard. And that's the absolute truth. There's nothing more than that. This is the parodharma. But actually, the proper consciousness is to understand everything is only coming from Krishna. Externally, these things are connected with my body, so therefore I got some external responsibility. But ultimately, my responsibility is to Krishna. That is the responsibility of the soul. So I use all these material environment to please Krishna. And this way I can go back to Krishna, I can be fully Krishna conscious. Even within this external complicated situation, if I learn to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna, then I'll be delivered. And relatively speaking, the brahmachari life is much more free. There's not so much headache. You don't have to deal with the income tax and with the rent payments and with wife and children and sickness. Except only your personal problem is there, whatever your clothing, your body, and then generally there's not so much disease if one is rising early in the morning and taking bath and attending the Mangal Arati and chanting. There are not so many difficulties. Life becomes more complicated in the Grihastha. But then, If one's a brahmachari, they should take advantage of having this relatively free life to give more energy to Krishna consciousness. If they have a relatively free life, but they listen to rock and roll music that's not Krishna conscious, not Prahlad and the Krishna kids, but something else, or if they get distracted by other kinds of distractions, and they allow various weeds to continue to grow in their heart, then what is the advantage? You see, they're not gaining the full advantage. They're like that proverbial wedding party was going, trying to cross the river in a boat, but the anchor was never pulled up. They rowed the whole night. In the morning, they saw that the boat was on the same side. So we have to pull up the anchors. And someone who's training as a brahmachari, they may in the future also become a grihastha, that is the vanashram dharma, or they may remain as in the renounced orders. That's up to the decision of guru and their own ability. But a person, they have to cultivate, whether a grihe or whether in a bona, whether in the ashram or whether in the grihe ashram. Everyone has to cultivate this consciousness, not to do anything, nothing, if it's not for Krishna. Even the most subtle thing, if it's actually not for the pleasure of guru and Krishna, if it's for our own personal pleasure, is maya. Therefore, we have to eradicate that. The maya in any form, you see, for those in the renounced, so once they get rid of the gross attachments, then the subtle things start to attack. And we have to refine and refine our devotional service till we get to the purest state. So the practice is the same, it just becomes more difficult to differentiate the more subtle that the mayas become. Sometimes you can hard to tell what's a maya and what's not. Because renunciation is very similar to devotional service. But even to renounce something which is favorable to devotion is also material. Say that somebody, sometimes there are people in India, some big gurus, so-called gurus, someone wants to give money, they say, no, I won't touch money. I give to my secretary, I won't touch. So, the Prabhupada, he said, no, I'll take money, you give me, I'll take with two hands. What's that? Because I'll use it for Krishna, I won't use it for myself. For myself, I don't need any money, but for serving Krishna, we want to print books, we want to build temples, we want to do big festivals. We have so many uses for money, we can use it. But for myself, I don't have any. I have enough cloth that I don't need. But for Krishna, we have so many uses. But someone is showing that, no, I won't touch. So in this way, they're trying to put forward some kind of impression that they're very renounced. But all these are all their form of subtle attachment to get name and fame as being a great renunciate without practically educating people that money is something which is only bad when we only use it for material purposes. If we use money also for promoting Krishna consciousness, money is not bad. If we use it for material things, then it's neutral. If we use it for sinful things, then it's very bad. So all these things help to educate us that devotional service is a great science. And here we see that how Bharat Maharaj, he gave his love to the deer. I mean, we all have a natural propensity to love. We want to give our affection, we want to give our love. Now who do we give that to? So naturally, we give it to our family members, naturally we give it to the people we're associating with. But sometimes there's a test. Just like the Parsaram, he was tested by Krishna, by the Supreme Lord. He was tested by his father. He had to do the supreme test. Where was his attachment? So of course he passed the test. So similarly, we're also tested at different times, and it's up to us to take these tests in stride. Sometimes someone says something to us, and a new person comes, and they have to learn so many things. It's a new environment. Someone chastises them. Why are you eating with your left hand? Why are you doing this? And they get a little ego. Why are they always getting on my case? Why are they always telling me these things? These are all false ego that we have to give up. You see, even if someone might be very gentle in how they're explaining Prabhu, I like you very much, do this thing. If someone might be a bit inexperienced and just say it in a very harsh way, we just take it, alright, this is the mercy of Krishna. This is just to teach me some humility. So also sometimes someone takes initiation or they become a devotee even though they're living outside. But before, generally when someone's like a life member or they're like a devotee from outside, they're given very formal respect. But it's more like a social etiquette. But in their devotee, they're expected that you should do some little service when you come to the temple, because it's as much your temple, your family, as someone living inside the temple. So then when they're not given that same amount of formal respect that, say, a life member, a donor is given, they're treated more familiarity as a devotee, then sometimes they feel that this is not proper. So for Srila Prabhupada said, you have to be one or the other. Either you're a life member or you're a devotee. You see, not that you're both. If you're a life member, that's one thing, you want to give formal respect. But if you're a devotee, then so everyone devotee is the same. We don't consider like that. All devotees have the same right to go back to Godhead if they remain fixed in their Krishna consciousness. So it's not wrong. One time, of course, devotees, they get bewildered. One time, Prabhupada was describing all these things and about the danger of attachments or things like that. So then he asked one parent, well, how do you feel about your daughter? And he said, well, I don't know. I just say, I'm trying to be detached. Prabhupada said, no, this is not the way. You love your daughter. You love your child. Don't artificially or trying to be detached. It's natural to love your child. If you love your child, but then you love Krishna more, then you really love your child. Let me try to make this child a full person, that the person is materially qualified as well as becomes also a lover of Krishna. In their childhood, it's easy to cultivate this God consciousness in the minds of children. They're more simple, they're more open, so the natural spiritual quality can be brought out by giving them Krishna prasadam, by chanting. So you love your child, it's all right. Now because you love your child, give the child the best. Try to free the child from the repetition of birth and death, to give your child the God consciousness, in addition to the material things that you have to provide. That is the proper dovetailing. Not that someone has child and says, I want to be detached. Then the child will be untended and uncared. That is not pleasing to Krishna. So devotional service is something very practical, very utilitarian. Someone loves their wife or their husband, so they try to help their spouse to be God conscious. You see. At the same time as maintaining their own consciousness. This is the Krishna conscious way. It's called mercy. We try to help others. That's the mercy, compassion. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was a special, showed this Jukta Vairagya and his different devotees. Some of them were very renounced. Like Sukumbhar Brahmachari was only wearing just one cloth, begging every day from house to house. Others were even very wealthy, like Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was a very wealthy Jamindar, who had so much landed property, but he was always engaged in his home in Krishna's service. And even we found that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was magistrate, he had to preside over so many. When you're a magistrate in a government, you have to go to so many social functions. So he'd do all his social duties also, but his primary drive was towards spreading the Krishna conscious movement. And he used his position in such a way that this God consciousness was promoted in society. So although he was a government officer, although he was a grihastha, he's considered as our acharya in the disciplic succession. And he's one of the greatest acharyas. So, grihe thako, bone thako, sada hore bole dako. We should see beyond the externals. And whatever situation we're in, we should try to use that particular situation to be Krishna conscious. If somebody finds maya in us, we should be rather open and objective to analyze that and to do the needful to eradicate it. And this way we can progress step by step back to home, back to Godhead. The main thing is we need to chant Hare Krishna, you see, within our daily activities while we're driving or while we're working or while in the morning when we get up. We can spend little time, you see, we can chant Hare Krishna And this way, this helps to bring our consciousness into the proper attitude of service to Krishna. So that's why we chant every day. We try to chant 16 rounds to guarantee that to a good extent, if we try, we can remain Krishna conscious. But even for people living outside, they can gradually cultivate the practice and chant more and more Hare Krishna, keeping a regular minimum. Just as we do in our Namhata, we have some people who chant minimum 4 rounds a day, some 8, and gradually they come up to 16. So in this way, they can gradually develop their consciousness and their attitude with the help of the holy name. It's not easy to just suddenly change one's attitude. By the power of Krishna's name, one can purify the consciousness. But those who are staying here in the temple, they're very fortunate. They have this total environment in which they can practice their Krishna consciousness. We have the temple here so that people coming from outside, we should preserve such a pure atmosphere here that someone will come, they'll say, oh, this is temple, this is very holy, this is very pure. Let me try to make a replica of this in my house by having temple, by having chanting, by having Krishna conscious environment as much as possible. Let me take a little vibration from the temple and let it remain in the house. So, any questions? Yes?
In this age of Kali Yuga, since we haven't developed love for Krishna, how did I become?
Well, material desires are always there. They're coming in your mind. I don't allow any time to address those. I keep busy. Who can say that there are no desire comes? Desire may come in the mind. Till we go back to Krishna and we have material body, the desire may come. But that desire, we either dovetail it in Krishna's service or we reject it. Even Prabhupada, one time someone said, I have no lust, Srila Prabhupada. I have no material desire. The Prabhupada said, really, what's wrong with you? So I have material lust, but I have no time to address that. I have no time for that. I'm too busy in Krishna's service. You see, the point is that nobody can say that in the material world, even if they were desireless, they shouldn't say that, because that would give, even if someone was a Nitya Siddha and they had no desire, which is very unlikely, find such souls in this world. But even if that were the case, they should supposed to take their role as a conditioned soul to teach by example others. So even if one has some desire comes in the mind, that desire is either dovetailed, seen if that can be used for any Krishna conscious purpose. If it's totally material, then it's rejected with appropriate disgust according to the nature of that particular thought. We stay so occupied in Krishna's service that there's no chance for Maya to come in. There's a secret. Back to Tony. People mean devotees or anybody? You have a very fertile ability to create these different scenarios. The point is that in the Bhagavad Gita it says we should avoid fear, anger, and illusion as obstacles in devotional service. When someone, we hear about a spiritual world, it's all persons, we become fearful that in this world I'm having so much trouble interrelating with people. If I go to the spiritual world, I have the same problem, so I better just merge. Or I should give this up or try something else. That's fear. Or anger, because someone tries different spiritual processes and then finds that some guru is not true, or somebody has some defect, or there's something wrong, and so they get angry that nothing is real, nothing is true. I give it all up. I'm just going to stay here in illusion. So this illusion and anger and fear, this has to be given up. This is the recommendation of the Bhagavad Gita. You may have difficulty relating with people here in the material world, but in the spiritual world it's known as Vaikuntha. Automatically, anyone who goes to Vaikuntha is in harmony with everyone else. That's the nature. So if we're in spiritual life, we have to have a spiritual master, and we have to surrender to him. And the spiritual master guides one. One has to be receptive to the advice of the spiritual master, and he guides one how to avoid this type of personal conflicts. May give someone who's his mentality may be very angry or very antagonistic. So the guru may give him such a service. He may be the night guard in the temple, so he never meets anyone. He just meets at the Mangal Arati, then he sleeps in the day and gets up and whatever. He'll give some, until a person gets enough of the edge off of him that can be adjusted by the guru. But one has to take a guru and has to take guidance to solve all these problems. How can a diseased man say, I'm diseased, now let me decide I'll go into Brahmajyoti, I'll do this, I'll do that. We start making all these type of decisions, and in the end you don't go into Brahmajyoti, you just stay in the material world, or you'll be in a worse situation. The point is that, first of all, Brahmajyoti for a devotee, when we hear that, we think material world is better almost. It's like a kind of spiritual suicide. Because from the material world there's a chance to go back to the spiritual sky. But from Brahmajyoti, it's like a dead end. From there, you can't get out, you can't go anywhere, except eventually you might fall back in the material world after an indefinite period of unlimited time. So, thing is that anyone in this situation, they should actually surrender to a bona fide spiritual master and allow that spiritual doctor, the guru, to guide one and how to get over the difficulties. Otherwise, if they try to speculate, I'll do this, I'll do that, they're going to end up in some bad situation. If we go to a doctor, that I have a disease, I have a problem, I can't get along with people, I don't have a problem, I'm not happy when I do my devotional service, or I don't have an attachment for Krishna consciousness, or these problems disturb my mind, or whatever it may be, we go to the guru or representative guru, and we try to get these things purified by their advice. Just like if we have a physical disease, we go to the doctor and say, I have a bellyache, what should I do? He gives us some pill, take this, and it's cured. But that coming back to the material world may be after trillions of creations, or maybe after, 10 minutes. And there's no guarantee, you can't say that when that's going to happen. Once you're there, you're out beyond time. And so the period that you're there is indefinitely immense, it's beyond time. To a certain extent, it's beyond the influence of time. So there's no person, we know that they can come back. When they'll come back, if they'll come back, no one can say exactly what's going to happen. Yes?
What do you have to say about the people who are under the conviction that anything that has shape or form is not the same? What does the shape or form have to do with it? What shape
or form? No. For them, they can study first the first parts of the Bhagavatam, which deal with the Visharupa, understand the immense impersonal aspects of God, and then gradually go into the personal form. The point is that the material world is not permanent, it's asat, and the spiritual world is sat, or eternal. But this material world is a reflection of the eternal spiritual world. It's a reflection. So actually, but the reflection is not permanent, so therefore, from one point of view, it's not real. It's not actually false, it's just temporary. But temporary reality means it's relative, it's not absolute. So, the person realizes that the form of God or the form of Krishna is not temporary. It's made of Satchidananda. It's not of the same nature at all. If one can eventually understand that, then they'll have no difficulty. But because someone who's too attached to the material world, even in a negative sense, that is an obstacle for their advancement. A person should not be over-attached or repulsed, but a person should see something as it is. You can also study the Sankhya, what is the analytical study of the material world and the teachings of Lord Kapila, and then you can understand what is the material world and what is the spiritual world. They say that there's no, well, the form is false, but then they say, what is the supreme truth? They say, there's no supreme truth, the Buddhists. The impersonalists say the supreme truth is nirakar, or it has no form. But if the absolute truth has no form, then where has all this form come from? If something that is the ultimate truth is simply a void, or simply rather an impersonal reality, then from impersonal, how does suddenly their personality and quality come manifest? How does something come from nothing? Because the supreme truth is everything that the relative truth has, but in a perfect and complete manner, in a more complete manner, completely complete manner, therefore the supreme truth is actually also has form, but that form is of a different nature. It doesn't have the shortcomings that material form has. But sometimes to understand that, first they have to go and understand the Vishwarupa, understand what is Brahma Jyoti, what is Paramatma, then finally they can realize what is Bhagavan. That Bhagavan is something categorically different. So for someone who's too attached to the impersonal, they may have to go on a very gradual understanding and first understand the greatness of God, and then gradually come into understanding His personal feature. And someone who is more open-minded, more intelligent, they can immediately see that this material world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Reflection is two-dimensional. The original object is three. This material world is three-dimensional. The spiritual world is the fourth dimension. In the fourth dimension, these inebrieties don't stand. So the same problems we find here with form and shape, there we don't have those difficulties, because there form and shape is also not limited to size. It goes beyond that. So I have to get ready for my 7:25 flight. Thank you all for your patience, opportunity to serve the deity here, speak on the Bhagavatam for my purification. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Shri Nu Emuna Dham ki, Shri Shri Rahak Shri Kushur Gopinath ki, Nitai Gaur ki, Jagannath Subhadra Balaram ki, Gaur Priman. Sudacharya Pad ki.